Happy Sunday. Happy Sunday, everybody. My name is Carrie, and I am an alcoholic. I always have been and always will be. My home group is the New Horizons Group in beautiful Bend, Oregon. And I have a sobriety date of March 25th, 2010. And I have a sponsor who has a sponsor and uses her sponsor still. And I am still actively using my sponsor, and I'm still sponsorable, which is huge for me because I did not come in sponsorable. I also sponsor other women and take other women through the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And that's what I do for service in my first legacy of recovery, because, you know, the first legacy of recovery has a 12th step. And the principle behind that 12th step, obviously, is we get to carry this message to other alcoholics and practice these principles 1 through 11 in all of our affairs. And so for me, that's step work. When I sponsor others, when I take others through the work, that's not service work. That's 12 step work. I do, however, do service work as well. I do some service in the third legacy. I do dabble in the 12 concepts of world services, which is that third side of the triangle that has really not a whole lot to do with the first side of the triangle, the base of the triangle, which are those 12 steps. And so I just have to always remember. And the reason I say it is because I get so involved in service sometimes, third legacy service, that I never want to think that I've graduated from my step work, from taking other alcoholics through this work, because that's the service that I need to stay sober. I don't need to do general service to stay sober. I don't need to do third legacy service to stay sober. But I do have to do all 12 steps, including the 12th step, to stay sober. And so that's step work that I have to do, is take somebody else through this work. And so with that, I did just get home from a workshop just like literally 20 minutes ago, where we had Billy M speak here locally at a district workshop. And it was a lot of the same topic. So I'm gonna try to not repetition too much, but for those of you who are in the Zoom room today, who was just in the TEC, Trinity Episcopal Church, which is where my home group meets, which is where we had the workshop today. So I don't want you to hear too much of the same stuff over and over again. My dog hasn't seen me all day. He's very excited. Sorry about all the noise. I'm going to just start with the topic that is on the flyer. I love the flyer. Thank you, Dee, so much for creating this amazing flyer that kind of gives me a guideline and an outline of what I'm supposed to talk about today. So first, open versus closed meetings. One of the reasons I love this topic so much is because I don't have to make anything up, right? I don't even have to share experience. We have the definition of an open meeting and a closed meeting in our general service conference approved literature. Is it the definition on the blue card, which I just got to hear a lot about an hour ago? No, it's not, because our blue card, it's just a service piece. It's not our general service conference approved literature. Groups can use the blue card. They don't have to use the blue card. That's group autonomy, right? My home group, we don't use the blue card. We pretty much stick to conference approved literature in my home group. And so where is the definition of I'll let you know. Another speaker that talks about the blue card quite a bit says, he always says, I hate the blue card. He says, I hate the blue card because it doesn't match our conference approved literature. Well, a lot of people think, well, why do you hate it? Well, I'm not going to speak for him, but I'll speak for myself and I'll tell you why I hate the blue card. It's not necessarily because it leaves out the most important, probably, line of the, which is what I think the other speaker, why he hates it, is because on page 13 of the AA group pamphlet here, where it gives the definition of the open and the closed meetings, is that it says non-alcoholics may attend open meetings and as observers. That is the reason for an open meeting, right? Like an open meeting, it's not so that we can share more freely. In fact, in an open meeting, I have to be more careful about how I share, what I share, and what I'm representing as Alcoholics Anonymous, because that's the meeting. The open meetings are the ones that our CPC chairs, cooperations with the professional community chairs, and our public information chairs and committees, those are where we send all of the professionals, all of the education, the people, you know, working in the education field, the people working in the hospitals and the, you know, the health field, the judicial system and the attorneys. We send them to open meetings so that they can see what AA is and is not. And so in an open meeting, I don't dare share about outside issues, right? I don't drop the F-bomb. I'm representing Alcoholics Anonymous because it's public in an open meeting. Now, when I go to a closed meeting, I don't know. I might drop the F-bomb. I might share about some outside issues. Why? Because you're all just a bunch of drunks like me. Like, it's a closed meeting. It's like behind closed doors, right? The way my family kind of talks about, you know, to each other, and we can joke back and forth or whatever. Whereas when we're out in public, we probably don't want to be saying some of the things that my husband calls me in behind closed doors. Probably not something that we want to say in the grocery store to each other, or, you know, the authorities might be called. I don't know. You know, I'm just saying. So that's the difference between an open and a closed meeting for me. And so it's very important that we don't forget what an open meeting is, right? There's a line in the 12 and 12, and I did get off topic, of course, but there's a line in the 12 and 12. Because back in the day when AA first started, we didn't have open or closed meetings. We just had AA meetings, right? We didn't have even Al-Anon family groups. So a lot of the wives would, well, they would brew gallons of coffee. The wives would, is what our old literature says, right? I mean, they were there in our meetings, and so were everybody else. Like, anybody who might want this way of life were welcome to come and attend our meetings. However, 12 years after the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous was written, Al-Anon family groups was started. And therefore, they had their own fellowship to go to now, right? And so all of the meetings, they didn't call them closed, but all of the meetings at that point were closed meetings. Only alcoholics were welcome. Now, on page of the 12 and 12, I think it's in tradition 12, actually, I think it's in tradition 12. Let's see. Yes. On page 186 in your 12 and 12, right smack dab in the middle of the page, it tells why open meetings were created. It says, consequently, many groups begun to hold meetings which were open to interested friends and the public, so that the average citizen could see for himself just what AA was all about. Because we started getting inquiries from the professional community, from the judges, from the, you know, schools, from other 12-step fellow, other people who had other problems, you know, who maybe wanted to come into our meetings and take what they needed, as long as they left the rest, right? That's where that actually phrase came from. I don't know if anybody's heard somebody say in AA, take what you need and leave the rest. Well, that was actually originated in when Bill was approaching, Bill Wilson was addressing our non-alcoholic friends in a talk he gave called Let's Be Friendly with Our Friends. I think that was the one. And he said, you know, we want you to come to our open meetings. Please come and take what you need, but please leave who you see here, what you hear here, please let it stay here. That was also addressing the non-alcoholic. That was addressing the non-alcoholic and open meetings. That's not to the alcoholic. Please, what you hear here in an AA meeting, please don't let it stay here. Like, you know, use this in your everyday life. Take it out in the other 23 hours of the day. That was not written for the alcoholic. That was written for the non-alcoholic. And so our open meetings, and I love Jimmy D. Class B, Southwest Regional current trustee, he gives this talk. Well, he's given it before and I've heard it and I love it. And he talks about how the open meeting is our number one public information tool that we have. And he talks about back when Jack Alexander wrote that article. You know, Jack Alexander was, for any of you who are new or nearly new to Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, obviously first welcome. And I'm trying not, I'm going to try to just use, you know, simple terms today. That article, Jack Alexander was someone who only wrote, only took cases. He was he wrote for the Saturday Evening Post. He was a big deal back in his time, but he only took cases. He only went and did investigated things that he knew he could expose for the truth, right? Like he wanted to take cases that he could show the world, look what I just uncovered about this society, right? And AA, he went into it writing this article and doing this research on, of course, they're not giving like for free and for fun. Who does that, right? Like no society, they must be doing something. It must be a con, it must be a pyramid scheme. And he came to lots of meetings, you know, and sat there and built, and he came up with nothing. Like he came up with nothing. It was the only Jack Alexander article. I've been told it was the only Jack Alexander article in all of his huge career that ended up like they genuinely just want to help other alcoholics. Like there's no scheme. And so this guy, Jack Alexander, this deep undercover, you know, journalist, he sat in our rooms and Jimmy D talks about how he gets to his home group kind of early sometimes. And he sits there and he closes his eyes and he listens to the chitter chatter and he listens to the greeter at the door welcoming the newcomer into Alcoholics Anonymous and answering any questions they may have. And he listens to the two old guys that haven't seen them each other since the week prior, you know, talking about their whatever medical, you know, whatever. He listens to somebody 12-stepping somebody else, you know, by the coffee machine. And he thinks, would Jack Alexander have written that article? If this was, you know, if this is what he heard. And I take that to heart and I take that back to my home group. And, you know, today I believe that the meeting before the meeting and the meeting after the meeting is just as important as the meeting. And you never know who's present, right? And so when it's an open meeting, even before the meeting and after the meeting, I'm not talking about politics. I'm not talking about religion. I'm not talking about, you know, what I do for a living. I'm talking about how are you today? Welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. It's nice to see you in a meeting. You know, do you have a sponsor? Do you have a big book? And so I'm, you know, I'm really appreciative. So getting back to the blue card and why I personally hate the blue card, which I'll admit it, I hate it too. But why I hate the blue card is not necessarily because it leaves that sentence off that non-alcoholics may attend open meetings as observers, because I think the wording of the blue card is pretty self-explanatory that only an alcoholic is going to I mean, how is a non-alcoholic going to share about their alcoholism? You know, I mean, it's pretty self-explanatory. Why I don't like it is because it gives an extreme misrepresentation of the third and fifth traditions. It mixes them up. It says in respect, and I'm just going to pull up the blue card because I don't have it in front of me and I don't want to misquote it in any way. Blue card in AA. All right. So for an open meeting, it says, this is an open meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. We're glad you're all here. First of all, it says especially newcomers. Sorry, but you know, no one person is more important than another person in Alcoholics Anonymous. We know that, tradition one, right? The group comes before any one individual, before me, before you, before the old timer, and yeah, even before the newcomer. So we're glad you're all here, period. Everybody. In keeping with our singleness of purpose, this is the part that gets me. In keeping with our singleness of purpose and our third tradition, which is not our singleness of purpose, our third tradition is our membership tradition. The fifth tradition is our singleness of purpose, which states the only requirement for AA membership is a desire to stop drinking. Well, if that's the case, that's the third tradition. That's not the fifth tradition. And then it says, which states only requirement for AA membership is desire to stop drinking. We ask all who participate confine their discussion to their problems with alcohol. Well, that's the fifth tradition. The fifth tradition is the one that tells us to confine our discussion to our problems with alcohol. The third tradition is the one that says, we don't care what else you are, you're welcome. And you're just as much of a member. The third tradition, you know, it doesn't break the third tradition to say, to introduce myself as I'm Carrie, I'm a, you know, alcoholic and a drug addict and a Republican and a Democrat, sometimes on the weekends, and a atheist who goes to a Christian church and blah, blah, blah. I mean, I could throw everything under the sun, and I am within the third tradition because I threw alcoholism in there. So I think we get a really mixed idea of what the third tradition and the fifth tradition really mean because of this blue card, because of some well-meaning committee member who wrote the blue card that did not get it approved by the conference. So that is why I don't like the blue card, because it should say in keeping with the fifth tradition, we ask all who participate to confine their problems to alcohol, not in keeping with the third. The third is our membership tradition. So that's my gripe with it. I don't think I've ever admitted that at group level. So there you go. I don't know if I'll do it again. So the next thing on my list today, it looks like, is self-support, the seventh tradition. Well, self-support, you know, there's not just one principle behind every tradition. There's many, but if there was just one behind the seventh tradition, I would call it responsibility, because there's so much talked about in every piece of our literature, that points to responsibility, whether it's this guy, the 12 traditions illustrated, every piece points to responsibility. And so I'm responsible for the long form of the seventh tradition. And you can find it in the back of the AA group pamphlet. Or in the back of your 12 and 12, but the long form, the very first sentence says the AA groups themselves ought to be fully supported. And let me remind you, you know, some of these traditions, they're talking about the whole fellowship, right? They're talking about like our membership, like our third tradition says the only requirement for AA membership, like not membership to a group, right? This is talking about the groups specifically. The AA groups themselves ought to be fully supported by the voluntary contributions of their own members, not of AA members. It doesn't say voluntary contributions of AA members. It says of their own members, of the group's members. So I don't know if there's a single tradition or a single custom or a single principle that we have gotten more farther away in AA than this one, because we are a buck in the basket society, you know, or $2 in the basket or whatever. One of my requirements for sponsorship, and there's only one requirement for membership in Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, a desire to stop drinking. You don't have to get a big book. You don't have to get a sponsor. You don't even have to go to AA meetings, and you're a member when you say you are. However, I have requirements. If you're going to call me your sponsor, there's sponsorship requirements that I'm not afraid to say that I use the R word. For me, if you're going to call me your sponsor, you got a few requirements. You're going to go through the big book. We're going to work steps. That's a requirement. You're going to have a home group, and your home group is going to be connected to the conference. It's going to have a GSR, a general service representative, which makes it a three legacy group. I want for my sponsees, for the women that I sponsor, I want them to have the whole AA, right? Not just a piece of it, because of how much I've gotten. I want them to be a part of the heartbeat of Alcoholics Anonymous. And that happens through the home group. So this one day I was meeting with this one woman who, I have a really bad headache today. I apologize, you guys. This one woman who asked me to sponsor her. And again, I don't just say, oh yeah, I'll sponsor you, or no, I'm too full. I've never answered that way. I've never said, no, I won't sponsor anyone who's asked me. Now I don't raise my hand for sponsorship either. It's just something that we don't do. And my sponsor didn't do, I don't do it either. But if you ask me to sponsor you, I'm going to say, well, let's go out for coffee or frozen yogurt or a Zoom call, right? Today. And I go down the list of things that first I don't do. Then I go down the list of things I do as a sponsor, like take you through the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, help you to have that spiritual awakening, introduce you to a home group, get you acquainted, whatever. Well, this one woman, and then I go through the requirements. And this one woman that asked me to sponsor her, she's been around for a lot longer than me. She has more sobriety time than me. I said, do you have a home group? And she said, oh yeah, it's such and such group. I'm not going to say it because some of the local members are here. And so I said, okay. Your home group have a GSR? No, we don't have a GSR. I said, oh, why don't you have a GSR? Well, I don't know why we don't have a GSR. We never have. I said, okay, maybe you need to find that out, because either you're going to need to change home groups to one that has a GSR, or you're going to need to step up and stand for GSR in your home group. You're going to need to ask somebody else to sponsor you, because those are my requirements. And so she comes back to me. They had a business meeting, like just happened to have a business meeting like 2 days later. And so she comes back the next day we meet up, or the next time we meet up, and she says, okay, so I asked why we don't have a GSR. It's because we can't afford it. We only meet once a week. We're a women's meeting. We're a small meeting. We only meet once a week. We can't afford a GSR. I'm like, oh, okay. Well, gosh, if a group can't afford a GSR, there's gotta be a underlying issue here. Right. And what we do in AA is we uncover, discover, and discard, right? We do inventory in AA. So I got my pad of paper out and I said, okay, let's take your group's inventory. And I started asking a lot of questions. And what I found out, Jeremy, could you not rough house with him right now? Oh, okay. So what I found out was that my dog hasn't seen me all day. He's very excited. That what her group was doing was they're meeting once a week, right? And it's easy for a group like mine, who at the time, my home group meets seven. Well, we met 6 days a week for the longest time. So it's easy for her, and we're a big group. So it's easy for her to say, yeah, well, New Horizons meets 6 days a week and you guys have tons of members. Of course, you're going to be able to afford it, right? We only meet once a week. We're not going to be able to afford it. And so I started thinking about it and I asked her, well, how many meetings do you attend? And she's a meeting maker, you guys. Like, this woman goes to 10 meetings a week. And she says, oh, about, a meeting or two a day. Okay, 10 meetings a week. How much do you contribute in the seventh tradition? A dollar. A dollar at every meeting. Okay, I'm not going to say how much I want you to contribute. I would never tell my sponsees how much to put in the basket, because it is... What's the same? What's $1 for one member is $100 for another member, and it's none of my business. That's a spiritual contribution. And I don't get to tell you how much to contribute, but I get to tell you where to contribute it. And I'll tell you what, if you're responsible for your home group and you're putting, in her case, $40, right? If she's going to 10 meetings a week, let's do the math, $40 a month into the AA baskets, right? So $40 a month into the AA baskets, And four of that is going to her home group? Well, I think we've just found the problem. How many of the other ladies contribute a buck? Well, we all just contribute a buck because we all go to a lot of meetings and, you know, that's how... Oh, okay. So like out of you're contributing 10% of your AA dollar to the only group that you get a say on where it goes. So 90% of your AA dollars that you're putting in the baskets are going to groups that you have no say on what they do. You don't know if they're spending it on expensive coffee creamer and birthday cakes. You don't know if they're sending a GSR. You have no business. You don't even have a business asking them. It's none of your business what they do with their money. So, you know, she took that information back to her home group and she said, well, you know, I guess, you know, we're supposed to be fully self-supporting. The long form, because I told her the long form says each group should be fully supported by the voluntary contributions of their own members. And she's going out and paying for everybody else's stuff and not supporting her own group. So didn't go over real well, apparently. The ladies didn't get it. They didn't understand. They're like, no, you just put money in the basket of every meeting you go into. Well, yeah, because that's kind of what our society does today in AA. I don't know how we got so far off track. But I think it took, I think, 3 months, 2 or 3 months before. I think once you hear something, you can't unhear it, right? And when these ladies are out in their community putting money in a basket where they don't know where it's going, knowing that they're taking money away from possibly having a GSR and being part of AA as a whole, it's harder to put the money in a basket where you don't know where it's going or what it's being spent on. And so with information comes responsibility. And slowly, little by slowly, that group today, they have a GSR. And their group is supporting their GSR through the voluntary contributions of their own members, because they don't go and put a buck in the basket at every meeting they go to now. They contribute to their home group. And that group is active. And that was years ago, and they're still active today. And so with the seventh tradition, I would just encourage everybody, and you know, and I'm not saying if you go to an anniversary meeting and they have dinner or a cake or whatever, I mean, be self-supporting, put a buck in the basket if you're drinking their coffee and eating their whatever, but don't expect that buck to be your seventh tradition. Your seventh tradition, your spiritual contribution to AA, making sure it gets to general service, you know, to the GSO, to all the different AA entities that your group wants to contribute to, that you shouldn't expect money that you're putting in other baskets to go to. You know, if I have you over to dinner to my house, okay, I'll let you bring a loaf of bread or an appetizer, sure, whatever. But as you're leaving, I'm not going to say, oh, hey, before you go, you owe 58 cents for your share of the electricity tonight, $1.10 for the water bill. Like, no, I'm going to pay for my own bills. Well, my husband pays for, he's right here. I don't want to hear him say, I pay for my bills. He pays for my bills. But you know, we pay in our household, you know, and we are contributing members of our household. Just like when you leave my house after you eat my food at dinner, I'm also going to not, I might let you clear the table a little bit, clean up the table, like, you know, put chairs away at my home group. Fine. That's not a service commitment, right? That's just doing some service. That's not a elected service commitment. But what I'm not going to do is say, hey, before you go, because you ate dinner here, could you please vacuum my office and make the bed in the master bedroom? No, it's not your job. That's why we have elected service positions at our home group, to be fully supported by the voluntary contributions of our own members, both monetarily and physically. So I hope that you guys can take some ownership in your meetings and your groups, your group. And I used to cringe when I would hear somebody say my group. And today I love it, because it means ownership. It means it probably means that the people in your home group know that you're a member there. Just a guess. So let's see. next item on my, and I'll just put up a little seventh tradition. I don't know if you guys want this or not, but for those super geeks like me, so I'm not making fun of you, because this is the stuff that I just love in workshops. I'm going to put up a little, oh no. Did I not prepare well? Okay, well, it's not going to come with a title, but I can put up the link to a seventh tradition printout that that is wonderful. Also, just real quick before I move on from the seventh tradition, we don't accept donations. Alcoholics Anonymous doesn't accept donations. And guess what? Your home group does not donate to the intergroup office, and they don't donate to general service. They contribute. And the difference between donation and contribution is huge. It's huge. These are spiritual principles. And even tradition seven is a spiritual principle. The difference between donation and contribution, for one, is our literature doesn't use the word donation. Our literature hasn't used the words donation or foundation since we adopted the seventh tradition, and we decided that we, you know, donation and the words donation and foundation imply a charitable organization. AA is not a charity. You know, I don't donate to my household bills. I contribute. I don't donate to the IRS. I'm a contributing member of society. And I am responsible for my own sobriety. I am responsible for my contribution to Alcoholics Anonymous, to my home group. It's not a donation. I don't get to pat myself on the shoulder for donating to the little people at AA. You know, that's, to me, that's offensive. One of the things that I do donate to is the animal shelter. I'm a newly found animal lover. I don't know where this has come from, but I donate to the animal shelter. I also donate to Meals on Wheels, which is a, you know, food for the homeless and stuff. I donate there. I don't have a responsibility. It's just something that I do out of the goodness of my heart. I can pat myself on the shoulder for that. When I contribute to my home group, it's not something I do out of the goodness of my heart. It's because I'm a contributing member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I take ownership when I contribute. And so that's why our literature doesn't use the D word. And you won't find that in our literature. Our literature is, you know, the seventh tradition is very spiritual. So it's my spiritual principle of self-support and responsibility that I'm a contributing member of Alcoholics Anonymous, both monetarily as well as physically. So that's, I just had to say that before I move on from tradition seven. Safety in AA, safety. Well, I love how we can go, I won't say overboard on safety. My idea of what is unsafe and your idea of what is unsafe are probably miles apart. But I think one of the things that we can all agree on, if you're on this end of the spectrum or this end of the spectrum, one of the things we can all agree on is predatory behavior in Alcoholics Anonymous is a safety issue. I don't use the term 13 stepping anymore because I was taught that that makes predatory behavior cute. I was taught that that's a cute, it's a cutesy saying, like, oh, ha, 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 we only have 12 steps, but we're going to call predatory behavior the 13th step because that's funny. It's not funny to me. Predatory behavior, let's call it what it is. It's predatory. If you're a gentleman dating a newcomer in Alcoholics Anonymous, I would just ask what your sponsor says about that, right? If you work for the treatment industry and you're coming to meetings to get intake paper packets filled out, that's predatory behavior. We don't sell stuff in AA. We don't utilize Alcoholics Anonymous and the sacred rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous to get our $225 intake packet fee or whatever that we get for filling that stuff out. We don't pass out our business cards in Alcoholics Anonymous. I've witnessed religious predators in Alcoholics Anonymous, people who are just coming to try to get you to go to their church, you know, people who are looking for more clergy for their church, people who are looking for a date, people who are looking for money, people who are looking for the little old lady who, she would be a good one to take advantage of. I wonder if she'll pay me to paint her house and then I won't do, you know, I've seen so much predatory behavior. Let's call it what it is. It's predatory behavior. We don't take advantage of each other in AA. We're here to help each other for fun and for free. So I'm going to read something that I love, written in the 2017 final conference report. So this happened at the 67th General Service Conference. This was a talk given by Vicky R., who is a was a delegate from California Northern Interior. And she does not mince words. So I'm going to read this, just this little part of it. I'm not going to read the whole thing. Besides the traditions, which obviously protect us, which this is me now, this is just me talking and getting off track again. The traditions obviously is number one of how we protect against predatory behavior and safety issues in Alcoholics Anonymous. Because why? Well, because we have tradition 8 that says, if you work for the treatment industry, when you're in AA, keep your mouth shut about it, right? We have tradition 6 that says, if you are selling Mary Kay when you're in Alcoholics Anonymous, keep your mouth shut about it. We have traditions that help to separate, you know, one hat at a time. We have traditions for a lot of these things. We have tradition 3. If you're a bigot or you are prejudiced against somebody, when you're in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, keep your mouth shut about that, right? We have traditions that protect us from unsafe stuff. But here's what she says we can do in addition. So besides the traditions, there are so many ways to increase safety in meetings. Good sponsorship, another tool we can use to increase safety. I would agree with that. We can start by talking about potential dangers and potentially dangerous people. It doesn't have to be a secret. If an individual who is known to the group as a predator, let the new person be aware. Predators are like cockroaches. The only way to get rid of them is to shine the light directly on them. Also, it's important to select good leadership in our groups, districts, and areas. Good leaders should know the proper procedures. So do you have a safety plan in your group? I do. My group does. If you want to see it, it's out in the open. My home group's website is newhorizonsgroupaa.com, and everything we do is transparent. So go to the About Us page. You can go and you can see all of our scripts. You can see our bylaws. You can see our safety plan. It's all there. And so, you know, my home group is not super popular with the predators because we have a safety plan. Our home group before we had a safety plan was super popular with the predators, but now we have a safety plan and they don't seem to come around my home group much. There are no AA police. The General Service Office has no authority, legal or otherwise, to control or direct the behavior of AA members and groups. So who has the responsibility? We all do. Collectively and individually, it is up to us. This is where the responsibility statement comes in. Who is responsible? I am responsible. I am responsible for keeping my home group safe for the new alcoholic who comes in looking for help, dying of alcoholism. That's my responsibility. Court cards. Oh my gosh. This is where I get to share some experience, not just the literature. Court cards. When I was first elected as secretary at my home group, now granted, I was like 6 months sober, right? 6 months sober. And I'm elected a secretary. Now I'm in charge, right? I finally got myself some power. And you come to my home group and you have a court card and you want me to sign it, but you weren't here at the start of the meeting. Oh, hell no. Nope. You got to give me your court card at the beginning of the meeting. And I'm not going to sign it until the meeting is absolutely over. And I'm going to keep my eyes on you. You better be paying attention in my own group if you want me to sign your court card, right? That's how it was for me for the longest time. And I'd have a line of people, you know, waiting for me to sign their court card. And were you here at the beginning of the meeting, right? It was my responsibility. It was my duty. No, I am not working for any judicial system, any treatment center. It is not my responsibility to make sure that person was there for the whole meeting. So then I go, my next phase of my development, and this is how my whole sobriety has been. I mean, like any good alcoholic, one extreme to the next. So then my next phase, I start getting into the big book, right? I have a spiritual awakening as the result of the steps. And the hell are you even doing here if you don't want to be here? If you don't want to be here, I'll sign your court card. How many signatures do you want? Here, I'll sign for the next 10 days. Get out of here. Come back when you want to be here, right? I mean, and I would do that. I would give them as many as they want because they're not going to be I'm not going to make anybody do anything that they're not going to, you know, we don't even want you here if you don't want to be here. Right? I'll sign for the next 2 weeks. Sign your own court card. Doesn't matter. They're not going to check, I would tell them. I mean, I did that. That was me for the longest time. I have balanced out a little bit as a result of just a little bit of experience in what not to do on both ends of the spectrum. And today, you know, each group is autonomous. And there's a wonderful, I did prepare these links, you guys, I promise. What happened here? Draft, maybe it's under draft. Oh yeah, there we go. So there's a, I don't know what happened to my stuff. There's a wonderful file. It's file F2, if my memory serves me. And it's called Information on Alcoholics Anonymous. It has some wonderful suggestions on what to, I'm not seeing it, on what to do about court cards, some suggestions from your group. Some groups don't sign court cards. Some groups are closed meetings and they don't believe that people who are sentenced to be there are all alcoholic because some of them might've just gotten a DUI. And a lot of non-alcoholics get a lot of DUIs, you know, a lot of heavy drinkers out there who are not alcoholic, who don't want to call themselves alcoholic, nor should they have to, because they can drink with impunity when they want to. So a lot of closed meetings decide we're not going to have court cards on the closed meetings. And maybe they'll have a meeting once a week that has an open meeting. Most of the time, that's a speaker meeting where it doesn't matter if they're an alcoholic or not, they're here to learn what AA is and isn't, so they can come to an open meeting and learn if they want and get their court card signed. Now, I've belonged to my last home group before the home group that I belong to right now. We had it in our script, and it's not wrong or right. Every group is autonomous, and you got to figure this out on your, you know, on your own. I don't want anybody to take this is what I'm suggesting. I'm just sharing experience. My last home group was called the Three Legacies Group of Bend, Oregon. And we had in our script that said when the basket was being passed, the seventh tradition basket, after we read, you know, this is when we pass the basket, the money we collect is used for literature, books, and to carry the message outside of our group. And then we would add on, if you're here on a court card and you would like to have someone sign your card, the Three Legacies Group does not affiliate. In respect to Tradition 6 and 10, the Three Legacies Group does not affiliate with the judicial system or any treatment centers. So we do not sign slips. However, if you would like to take this time as the basket is being passed, to ask your neighbor, someone sitting next to you, to sign as your witness, please take this time to do so. And, you know, when I wasn't in service that day, I would always be the one to just look around for cards and sign as a witness, as someone else in AA. And it didn't affiliate my group with that outside enterprise. Some groups don't feel that that's affiliation. Some groups feel that that is cooperation. I'm not here to say it's either one is right. I mean, you got to decide for yourself, right? My home group today, you know, we don't sign court cards. Some of the members of my group do sign court cards, and that's up to them. I'm not saying that that's right or wrong. In fact, you know, I'll admit if we voted on that today, you know, I would vote for the group to have somebody to sign court cards, but it's not, I'm not the queen of my home group. I'm not the, you know, I'm not the one ultimate authority. The authority comes from the group's conscience, and I do abide by the group's conscience. And so as it stands today, when I'm in service to the group, if I'm the chat chair, or if I'm, you know, the secretary that day, I don't sign court cards. If I'm just there as a member, then I will take the time to chat with someone and get them a digital proof of attendance. So that's just up to your group. Those are just some ideas of what you can do. Preamble. Okay, so I don't have much time for this, but these last four topics are all pretty much one topic. The preamble of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's called the AA preamble. Let's look at the first line of the fourth tradition long form. With respect to its own affairs. What does own mean? Well, it means you own it, right? What does my group own? My group owns coffee pots. My group owns our script. My group does not own the steps. We can't change the steps. My group does not own the traditions. We don't own the copyright on that. We cannot change the traditions. We can't alter the word God for Buddha or higher power or Jesus Christ. We can't do that. We have to keep, you know, if we're going to call it an AA group, we can't change something that we don't own. We own our script. We don't own the steps. We don't own the traditions, and we don't own the AA preamble. If we're going to call it the AA preamble, then I've been taught, and I believe in my heart of hearts, that no matter what my personal feeling is, if I hate the word people, I don't know who would hate the word people. It keeps it simple. I think fewer words, the better for somebody like me. But if you hate the word people, here's some experience. I don't care what the personally, if it were up to me, the preamble would read that we're a fellowship of alcoholics. I mean, that doesn't offend anybody. You would think, I mean, that is what we are. Yes, we're men. Some of us are women. Some of us are people, so whatever, but we're all alcoholics. Like, that's kind of the obvious answer. I mean, you would think, and it covers about five other traditions. Like, it solves a bunch of problems all at once. But I've heard people, since the preamble was changed, and it is the preamble, that is our new preamble, what it was changed to. I've heard people read it like this in some groups. Where is the preamble? Here we go. Alcoholics Anonymous, I heard this guy do this. Seriously, he did this on a Zoom meeting. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other. Now, how unifying is that? Now, I've also been to this young person's meeting. Well, it doesn't matter what kind of meeting, but I've also been to this other meeting where I've seen them read it like this. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of people who, I mean, so much arrogance. It's like, it's not a winning team or a losing team. I'm on the team of unity. Like, neither one of those things are unified. Like, who cares if I don't like the word? God, as he may express himself through the group conscience of the United States and Canada at our last General Service Conference, spoke. And if I think I know better than God, for one, I'm in trouble. But for another, I mean, the arrogance of the still defiant alcoholic ego will take me out. Like, I need to put AA unity before my own personal opinion about something. Now, if I don't like what AA God decided through group's conscience, then I have the right of appeal. My home group can write an appeal. This preamble thing isn't over. You know, this is going to be coming up for a few years. It raised a lot of controversy. And at this point, I hate the word men and women, and I hate the word people, because they're both so freaking disunifying. My home group doesn't read the preamble. Why? Because we don't want the divisiveness in my home group. We don't want people reading people or men and women. We just went, you know what? We'll pass on that whole controversy. We're about love. We're about unity. We don't want to be in that controversy. And so until the preamble is changed to something that is unifying, like alcoholics, something that's not going to offend anybody, we're just sitting this one out, right? And we knew it was coming. My home group, we're pretty involved in general service. And so we haven't said the preamble in a few years since we first heard it was going on the agenda, you know, because we knew this was going to happen. It breaks my heart when I see the fellowship fighting over something so silly. And both sides are guilty of bringing in their politics. And that's not what this is about. Your politics, they don't matter in AA. I have to sacrifice my personal ambition for the good of the whole. That's what AA is all about. I'm going to read whatever God decides. Whatever God decides at that conference is what I'm going to read. So with the preamble, you know, if you want to make up your own preamble, amazing, great. Don't call it the AA preamble, but your group can make up your own preamble. Your group does, you know, instead your group can read how it works. How it works was at least written by us for us. I mean, I don't know if you guys, Dee, maybe you can put up in the chat, the history of the preamble, the general service piece. That's the history of the preamble, but you guys know that the preamble wasn't even written for us. Like, it's a service piece. It was written by a grapevine editor, a paid professional grapevine editor, for non-alcoholics to let them know what we are and what we aren't. Because when we first started using the grapevine as a public information piece and dropping it off at like hospitals and treatment centers and stuff, a lot of non-alcoholics would go, what is AA? And we wanted something to tell the non-alcoholics, the society outside of our society, are the outsiders, what AA is. Preamble's not even for us. I mean, that's not even for us. Listen to the way it's read, okay? So that's why I love reading like how it works. That's for us, right? Forward to the first edition or second edition, we of Alcoholics Anonymous are, right? We, that's, it's written in the we. Well, the preamble is written as Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their, not our experience, drink, and hope, their experience, strength, and hope with each other so that they may solve their common problem. It's written by an outsider for outsiders. It's not written for us by us. Like, it was written for open meetings that are podium meetings and in our PI pieces to read so that non-alcoholics could have a definition of what we are and what we're not. And if it was written for the alcoholic, if it was written for the member, don't you think that there would be something in there about the 12 steps or maybe God or the big book or like, I mean, come on, you know, like we're fighting over this thing that's not even for us or by us. It's just ridiculous. So my home group, we just sit that one out. We just like let the controversy, you know, we just let those whirling dervishes whirl outside of our group because we're not going to let that something like that divide us. So the next thing on the list is prayers. Your group gets to read whatever prayer they want. They get to recite whatever prayer they want. And other readings, one of the other readings is, when I was new, that main reading that everybody reads, the responsibility statement, it wasn't super popular yet. Nobody even knew it. Nobody said it. Everybody was closed with the Lord's Prayer here. I mean, nobody knew it. But I didn't know the traditions. And I got my hands on that responsibility statement and I misread it. I misinterpreted it. And I thought that meant that my non-alcoholic friends could come in. I thought that meant AA needs to be here. Whenever anyone comes into the room, we're supposed to help them, even if they're not alcoholic, even if they're drug addicts, even if they're gambling addicts, even if they are just here to get a job, even if they're here to just pick up, you know, like we're supposed to be here whenever anyone anywhere reaches out for help. AA needs to put on our cape, our superhero cape, and rescue, right? That's what I thought the responsibility statement meant. And I loved that because I had a huge arrogance when it came to Alcoholics Anonymous. Like I thought everybody in the world needed to be an AA, not just alcoholics. Like I thought that this could save the world, right? And so I started printing out, because I didn't even know to order it. I got on Vista Print, and I had these big posters made of the responsibility statements that I started putting all over in every clubhouse, in every church basement. I started, you know, voting. This before I knew that I could only have one home group. I was not one among many. In fact, you couldn't go to a group conscience meeting in Bend, Oregon without seeing me there. And I was getting that Lord's Prayer out of here and bringing the responsibility statement in, because that's the one that lets my non-alcoholic friends be here. And I had no idea what the responsibility statement really meant, which has nothing to do with the alcoholic walking in the door today, which I thought that it meant. It has to do with the alcoholic in the ages ahead, not yet born. And I am responsible for learning these 12 traditions and getting involved in general service so that the alcoholic, even the isolated and the incarcerated, will always have the hand of AA, will always be there. And for that, I'm responsible. And if you don't believe me, the responsibility statement, Bill Wilson wrote an essay about it, and it's the last essay in the book As Bill Sees It. So everybody has As Bill Sees It, that's easy to look up. It's called I Am Responsible. There's another place you can go, the 1965 conference report. That's when we actually adopted the responsibility statement, because the theme of the conference that year is I Am Responsible. And it was actually more geared toward financial responsibility than anything else, originally the responsibility statement. But that's the year, 1965. That we became responsible for ourselves. That's the year that we used to have 14 non-alcoholic Class A trustees and only 7 Class B trustees who are alcoholic, right? Well, we became responsible that day at the conference when that responsibility statement was first presented to the fellowship. And what that meant was we switched that day. We no longer had 14 non-alcoholics and 7 alcoholics, we became responsible to take care of ourselves as alcoholics. We came of age. And at that day, we became 14 non-alcoholic trustees and only 7 non-alcoholic trustees, because now we are responsible. And for whenever anyone anywhere reaches out for help, even the isolated, even the incarcerated, that box 459 will always be there. And for that, I am responsible. So I know that this is coming as a shocker to a lot of you, because we just read it in meetings now, like it's supposed to close the meeting. But let me tell you, it's supposed to close service meetings. It was created. So the Serenity Prayer, right? That is to our first legacy of recovery, because like the God grant me the serenity to change the things I can. That's steps one. The serenity to accept the things I can. That's steps 1 through 3, acceptance, right? Then to change the things I can, the courage to change the things I can, that's 4 through 9. And then the wisdom to know the difference, that's a bitch, but that comes in 10, 11, and 12 slowly for me. But that's what our first legacy is, right? The Serenity Prayer. Our second legacy is the Unity Statement, which can be found on the back of this. And that's for the Declaration of Unity. That's for our traditions. That's our second legacy of unity. It says, to this we owe to AA's future to place our common welfare first. to keep our fellowship united. For on AA unity depends our lives and the lives of all to come. And then the responsibility statement is to our third legacy of general service, what the unity statement is to the second legacy and what the serenity prayer is to our first legacy. And that's what the responsibility statement really means. And so I'm still making amends, living amends to all of the groups that no longer say the Lord's Prayer, that unfortunately they still say that I am responsible at the end of the meeting, because that was the motion that I pushed through, because I thought that that meant that we could help anyone with any of their problems. And they're still saying that here, but I'm here to tell you that that's group autonomy, and your group can close with whatever prayer they want, whatever prayer is most unifying to your group. Promises, let me just give you some opinion here. If your group reads something called the AA promises, you're reading non-AA literature. There is no such thing as the AA promises. Those promises that we preach to the newcomer that are AA promises, like, when do I get those promises? When my, you know, graduate from my treatment facility, when I got my 90 and 90 under my belt? No, they're the ninth step promises. They're the ninth step promises as a result of being halfway through your ninth step. Like, by the time, but if we were painstaking by this phase of our development, what phase? Well, by being on page 84. More page 80, 83, wherever those ninth step promises are, that's what phase of our development. They're the ninth step promises. So when you hand a reading out, don't say read the AA promises. Say, will you please read the ninth step promises? Or if you're my home group, the New Horizons group, then you read the 10th step promises. We like those better. We like those better because they offer the newcomer hope in that they're not going to always have this chronic mind of an alcoholic that's going to be telling them to drink 24/7. That's what we like to, you know, and some groups read the fifth step promises. And one of my favorite groups, they read the third step promises to close their meeting. So that's autonomy. And we don't have AA promises. The AA promises are throughout the whole book. So if you read the ninth step promises, great. Call them the ninth step promises. Don't mislead the newcomer. Please, 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 please. And then, yep, and that's it. I covered my list. Yay!
You're so cute. Woo, woo, woo. All right. Thank you so much, Carrie. Now is the time for you guys to start submitting questions. I do have three, so I will be turning that over to you in just a minute. I'm going to ask you the first one that came in. But we have changed our format, speaking of group autonomy, and therefore at this time, we will now pass the virtual basket on screen. You might have wondered why you didn't hear it in the beginning. So it is hopefully coming up on screen. Let's see if this works. Oh, yeah, it is. It's just downloading. It seems like we're both having that trouble tonight with the, there we go. All right, so we will now pass the virtual basket on screen and in the chat with the options for contributing to our home group. For those that scan, my profile picture is not the Cash App, that is Brooks, but mine is the PayPal app right now. Check that out. And Seven Tradition contributions may be made electronically or by mail. We didn't have any cake or cookies or coffee, I'm just saying. I love that, what you talked about with the Seven Tradition, Carrie. AA Seven Tradition in its long form states the AA groups themselves ought to be fully supported by the voluntary contributions of their T-A-G-I-R own members. Alcoholics Anonymous is self-supporting through our own contributions. The contributions help to cover the group's expenses. It is both a privilege and a responsibility of individual groups and members to ensure that our organization at every level remains forever self-supporting and free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose. The monetary amount of each contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that joins us in unity with AA groups around the world. And do any home group members of the three-leg group have any AA announcements? I do. Again, for those of you that just that joined us a little late, we do have Craig W. starting our 13-week workshop next Sunday. In the traditions, he'll be doing a 13-week workshop in the traditions and in our second legacy of unity. So if that interests you, join us back here next Sunday. Also, as a district committee member in Area 15's District 6, I personally will be hosting a, we're in the middle of, what are we on right now? Seven? Yes, we're on seven. How could I forget? Tradition seven. Tuesday night with Carrie doing traditions and Billy doing concepts. We're on tradition seven and concept seven, unity and service. So we also have recordings. If you've missed that and it sounds interesting to you, it's the first time you're hearing of it, please get with me and I'll be happy to, matter of fact, we'll post a link in the chat for you to take home with you as well. So with that, do you have a home group? Nope, that's the part that we talk about later. All right, so now we are going to take questions. I've stalled enough for questions and I'm gonna come back on screen. There we go. So for those of you that have questions, please send them now. There's a little bit of time left for that. The first question is going to be this, Carrie, and I gave you time to look to see if anybody sent them directly to you. So the question I have is, please clarify what you mean by predatory behavior that makes things unsafe. And they're asking, I know, because they're just a little confused with what they're saying. Can you say it in a different way? Then there's another person. They're two in one. I want to hit it on the same thing so that you can answer two of these at one time. The other question came in and it's about the similar thing. It says, which tradition protects newcomers from being preyed upon by members, as in dating? So we're talking about that. Thank you.
Okay. Well, okay. So I guess the dating one would probably just fall under tradition one. That's the one that doesn't really... unity, obviously, you gotta, you know, if you just go to a whole lot of loosely knit AA meetings, there's probably not going to be a structure in place for a safety plan, right? There's probably not going to be regular members that attend every week that talk to each other outside of the meetings. A group of people who talk to each other between meetings, who go and do things together, who are texting together, who are talking about the meeting last time, trying to make it better together. There's a place in the big book that talks about the AA group that is in A Vision for You. And it kind of differentiates between the meeting and the group. And I'm just going to read that real quick. It's in A Vision for You toward the end of the chapter, I think. Here we go. A year and 6 months later, this since the AA began, these three AA members, right? Bill Wilson, Dr. Bob, and Bob Dotson, the three AA members, succeeded with seven more a year and 6 months later because we were a rapidly growing society. So now we're up to 10 members seeing much of each other. Scarce an evening passed that someone's home did not shelter a little gathering of men and women happy in their release and constantly thinking, this is what home groups do, constantly thinking of how they might present their discovery to some newcomer. Now, in addition to these casual get-togethers, it became customary to set apart one night a week for a meeting so that you can 12-step the newcomer, so that newcomers can bring their problems and you can share your experience, strength, and hope with them. But the home group is the heartbeat of AA. Meetings, not so much. Meetings are where the home group members get together and present their discovery. And so if you have a home group that's doing their job behind the scenes, then when safety issues come up, your group's gonna be unified in what to do. I'll give you an example. Madeline P., a past Pacific Region trustee, was doing this safety in AA workshop. This is not my experience, but what we do in AA is we pass on experience shared with us, right? And she was talking about one group that she was kind of service sponsoring at the time when they were having some safety issues, predatorial safety issues. The home group members knew the two predators that were coming into their group, they knew behind the scenes. They don't share about that at the group level. You know, they don't want to scare off other newcomers, right? But they knew because they're a closely knit group and from their business meetings and whatnot, who those two men are. So, and they happen to be men. They don't always have to be men. Believe me, there's women predators too. But those two men, whenever they came in, and those two men were told, you can't sit by newcomers. You can't sit by women. You can come to the meeting, but no more sitting by newcomers. no more sitting by newcomer women. And so what those two men had to look forward to is if one of them was sitting by a newcomer and one of the home group members who know the group inside and out notices that they're sitting next to a newcomer, then they stand up. They simply stand up. They don't say anything. They just simply stand up. And then the other home group members kind of notice, why is that person standing up? Oh, they're sitting. And then they stand up. And pretty soon you got all the home group members that are standing up, and that person doing what they're not supposed to be doing is probably going to move because they don't want to be embarrassed. I think that's a great way of not scaring off the newcomer and keeping the room safe. Does that make sense? Is that good for that answer?
Yeah, absolutely. And then as far as your, that's good. Let me see real quick in my chat. Did you get any also? Because you have
I have one that says, what kind of a lead is this? What kind of an AA lead is this? So somebody must have not known this was a workshop. They said, is this an AA bitch session about how much you don't like general service? I love general service. That was a fun one. Here, how about this? Question, why does the meeting guide, quote unquote, smartphone app as a service of AA World Services, and this is an amazing question, advertise an incomplete definition of an open meeting in the meeting search? Thank you for your talk. I don't know. I hope that more people other than Carrie B. out of Bend, Oregon have written to them, because one person writing in doesn't do Jack SH. So I hope that more people will take the 30 seconds that it takes to send an email and say, hey, look at this. We actually have a description of an open meeting. You might want to use it. Okay. Do you have another question, Dee?
I love that. I do have another question. And also in the chat, when you were talking about an appeal about preamble and different things, I also put that link for submitting an appeal. And I can also put the one about agenda items. I mean, again, from last year that we did, but there's all kinds of valuable information that I know that you've shared with us that we have in links. And I did the preamble background as well. So for those of you that heard her say that, just check your chat. You're welcome. And so the question up now, you're welcome, is should my sponsor be my service sponsor too? At what point should a member get a service sponsor? How do we know whom to turn to?
Oh, I love that question. So I've never had a Three Legacy sponsor. My sponsor is the best sponsor in all of Alcoholics Anonymous. Sorry for the rest of you guys. She's my fairy godmother. She like knows more about the big book and me and my, you know, shortcomings and my patterns and my common manifestations. And, you know, she's amazing for me. And she can set me straight and she can turn me back to God. And I would never want anything different. But she's never even been a GSR. So how's she going to guide me through the service structure, right? So I've always had, because I'm a service junkie, I've always had a service sponsor who is, you know, has done more than me in general service and knows a whole lot more than me about the traditions. And so I've never had a Three Legacy sponsor. That's just my, you know, that's my, there was one point that I was kind of against service sponsorship and I was running my mouth at the podium, one year at the area assembly, like I do. And I was saying, you know, well, I don't think that there should be such thing as service sponsorship. And I don't even think it should be in the sponsorship pamphlet, because if we were all doing our job, and after going through the steps and taking our sponsees through the traditions, then we would just take them through the concepts and teach this stuff. Then we could make service sponsorship, you know, there should be no reason for it, because we should all be 36 principled, you know, members and whatnot. And somebody comes up to me afterward. They didn't do it as I was standing up there running my mouth like I probably would have. And they came up to me afterward and they said, hey, don't you have a service sponsor? And I'm like, well, yeah, but that's because my sponsor is not a, and I'm like, oh my God, you know? So I guess I mean, the idea would be wonderful. In a perfect world, every sponsor takes every sponsee through all three legacies. But in an even more perfect world, if your sponsor, who doesn't know anything about general service, has enough humility to say, you know what, I haven't done that. Why don't you go ask that person over there to be your service sponsor? I think that we could all learn and grow together in unity. So, you don't have to have a three legacy sponsor, get a service sponsor. If your sponsor is in general service and they know a lot about general service, there's no reason to get a different, you know, there's a woman in the room right now that I sponsor. I'm looking at her right now. I've been her three legacy sponsor since she got sober. But not only is she an alcoholic, but she is a drug addict and a member of another fellowship where she can be of maximum service to more people than just alcoholics. She's uniquely qualified to help people that I'm not uniquely qualified to help. And so even though she loves Alcoholics Anonymous, her home group is in a different 12-step fellowship because she's not selfish and self-centered, and she wants to help the maximum amount of people. And so she is very involved in general service in that other 12-step fellowship. She's a delegate right now. And she just called me, actually, we were in the car last night and she said, hey, there's something I wanted to talk to you about. I was thinking that I would get a service sponsor in the fellowship that I'm in, since it's a different service structure and they're set up different ways. And I said, I think that's a great idea. Just don't forget about the traditions. So, yeah. And then I have a question. Yeah. And I have a question not a question, but a different answer to an earlier question. I'm not looking for answers. Oh, of course, that's you. Okay, there is a different question. What is the main reason of not having a different gender sponsor? Do you see this changing in the future? Well, it just changed it this last, first of all, that's never been a thing, okay? The big book doesn't say that if you have male parts, ask someone else with male parts to sponsor you. It doesn't say anything like that. Like, you know, it just says help another alcoholic, right? There was a place in the sponsorship pamphlet that up until this year suggests that women stick with the women and the men stick with the men. But that doesn't do a whole lot of good for what if you're gay? What if you're neither? What if you're not a man or a woman? What if you're both? What if you don't identify as either? What are you going to do then? Well, just get an alcohol. You know, some of the time, I think that one of the other things the sponsorship pamphlet really does say, and I really appreciate this part, is they say, the question in the sponsorship pamphlet is, should I get a sponsor who is the most like me? And the answer is, that could work, but really, if you have less in common, then when you're together, you don't lose focus of that primary purpose of your relationship. And if alcoholism is what you're focused on, then that might work better. And thank God, because my sponsor and I have nothing in common. Like, she does not like being the center of attention. She's super spiritual and like oozes like this something I don't have. And she's just a beautiful woman inside and out. I learn so much from her. And when we're together, we don't eat the same foods. She's like 9 years off of sugar or something like that. And I eat donuts for dinner. I mean, you know, we couldn't be more different, but our relationship is about Alcoholics Anonymous and it stays pretty pure because of that. So, I don't know. So as far as different gender sponsors, I've sponsored men in the past. I've sponsored gay men, a lot of gay men, but I have sponsored men, straight men in the past. I've never heard a straight man's fourth step, because I don't feel comfortable, because I don't feel like he would be able to be rigorously honest. I used to be younger and better looking when I first started sponsoring. So I didn't want to be a distraction, of the men. It just didn't make sense for me at the time. Today, I'm business. I'm AA business. I know for a fact I could sponsor a straight man and keep it business. I do, right? However, it's not just me, it's that newcomer, you know, it's not my intent. My intent is AA. My intent is to carry the message. But what about the sick and suffering newcomer that comes in, not a bed of mental health, right? And I think that if I could be a distraction, I would rather, I mean, there's plenty of other people to help, people who are not going to be attracted to me. And so I can help them to find the help that they need. And once they go through the steps and start sponsoring others and reach 5 years, sure, I'll sponsor you. But it's just not, it's not a good situation for me, for this alcoholic.
Thank you, Karen. I've got some more real quick, and we're at 7:30, and you know the drill with this, 7:30 Eastern, because we're all over the place. You know the drill with this home group. We ask you if you're willing to stay after we close, for those people that don't want to close, don't want to leave our meeting out of disrespect and they have to go, we understand. So we'll go ahead and close, but we're still going to answer your questions. Those of you that have sent them in, don't think we're ignoring you. We're going to close, we're going to keep it recording, and we're going to go ahead and let Carrie answer. So thank you, Carrie. I know you've had a full weekend with conferences, et cetera, workshops. So thank you for being here, and thank you for taking the time again. And thank you all for being here. So do you have a home group with a heartbeat? Is it connected to the veins and arteries of Alcoholics Anonymous through its general service representative? A GSR carries your home group's vote to the conference. The three-leg group supports having a service commitment at your home group with an active GSR. If you don't already have a home group and are in need of assistance, email us your request at home@thethreeleggroup.com. Do you have a Three Legacy sponsor? Look at that. We were just talking about all this. The Three Leg Group supports Three Legacy sponsorship. This includes taking steps 1 through 9, practicing 10, 11, and 12, embracing the traditions for unity, and being considerate of the concepts for service. If you don't already have a sponsor and are in need of assistance, email us your request at home@thethreeleggroup.com. I will now close with the responsibility statement found on the back of our conference-approved pamphlets. I am responsible. When anyone, anywhere, reaches out for help, I want the hand of AA always to be there. And for that, I am responsible. So next question, I want to get right to business. I see we're losing some people that probably had to go. So somebody sent me a lot of information, and that person, if you're still here, stay after. You feel free to, I don't want to say debate in an ugly way, but the communication and debate, Carrie loves that. If she has time to stick around, she'll be happy to stick around with you and debate that. And no, Hugh, I'm not talking to you. I know Carrie already called you out. But there's another gentleman that was talking about the court cards. I know that that's a lot for some people. So if you want to talk about that, we can do that after. So the next question in line is, my area is talking about fundraising for translators. Is this the appropriate terminology? What would be better than using the words fundraising or donation?
Could you say that again?
Okay, let me go back to it. My area is talking about fundraising for translators. Is this the appropriate
Okay, so yeah, I heard it. So this is somebody from my area, Oregon Area 93. No other area does fundraising. It's against the F word in Alcoholics Anonymous. In fact, our alternate chair just did this survey of all of the other areas, all of the other 93 areas. And it turned out 95% does not do fundraising, and the 5%, which was the one area other than Oregon Area 58 that does do fundraising, said that it was they do fundraising by selling registration fees for their assembly, which is not fundraising. So basically 100%. So this is a question from one of my people. We're fixing that. We're not going to use the F word. I'm hoping if you show up to your area assemblies and use your voice and your vote, maybe we can get that stopped sooner rather than later. Because yeah, we don't fundraise in Alcoholics Anonymous. Yeah, it implies that we're taking outsiders' money, and so does the word donation. So if you go to, let's say you're at a conference and it's at a hotel, and the host hotel is not just your group, it's not just your conference there, right? But there's other people there with their family walking by the registration booth, seeing your donation can. That sends a wrong message. I've literally had to stop somebody, a non-alcoholic, going, oh, AA helps so many people, I'm going to donate. And it's like, no, that's not, that can's not there for you. That can really shouldn't even be there for us. That should be in the registration fee. We don't set out donation cans for Alcoholics Anonymous. That would be a contribution can in our hospitality room, maybe, where it's only alcoholics, but we don't have the handout. We don't want to take money from outsiders. Okay.
So cute. All right. Now I'm going to ask you again, only because this person is so confused. So I think you went on a little bit more about the one part of it, but we're talking about when you talk about financial predators, sexual predators, not, you know, not just being sexual predators, talking about Mary Kay, talking about, you know, like when you went on about that, because not everybody hears about that. What seems okay for you that you've been talking about or hearing about, but this is sometimes for somebody that's just hearing this for the first time, that, hey, maybe their friend in AA that comes to their home group, it does artwork or is an artist,
okay,
and brings,
okay,
in their, you know what I mean?
Okay. Yeah. Thank, okay. You. So at my home group, we had a guy coming in, trying to pass out his, he was the manager or the whatever house guy for, I don't know anything about sober living houses, but there was a new sober living house in Bend. And the guy that they got to kind of run the show, his name was Ben. He started coming to my home group, trying to pass out his brochures for the sober living house. And not really something that we do. You know, we don't let people use the meetings to sell their products.
Perfect. Yeah. That would be one of the examples of the financial predator. And then even like you mentioned church. So describe that again too, because
okay,
again,
one really another reason why non-alcoholics don't participate in our meetings is we had a guy, not an alcoholic, but we had a guy trying to share in our meetings about how, you know, we're all going to hell unless we come to his church with him, because he, you know, he's been saved and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, it's like, well, you know, he wasn't even an alcoholic. He just came because he really is passionate about his church and carrying the message of his church, and good for him. And it's not him that was breaking the tradition. You know, outsiders can't break our traditions. That's up to us. If we allow it, we're the ones that are, you know, it's like, it needs to be in our script. And there's a line in here on page 18 on the AA group pamphlet that is so helpful when it's in your script. So let's say that you have a lot of treatment center people coming in, okay? And they don't know what they are. They don't know if they're alcoholics. They don't know if they're addicts. They don't even know. They don't know anything because they're brand new, right? You got to give them room to figure it out. You don't want to embarrass them and like shut them down in front of everybody because they said addict instead of alcoholic, right? Like you don't want to make anybody feel bad, or feel like they've said something wrong or that it's something personal. So if you have a not so great script that doesn't explain this stuff, and then you let them start sharing and then you shut them down halfway through their share, they're going to take it personally. However, if they hear our conference approved primary purpose statement, which is not on the blue card, read in the beginning of the meeting in their script, it has nothing to do with them. It's read before they've even shared, right? So it says the primary purpose of any AA group is to carry the AA message to alcoholics. Alcoholics is in italics. Then it continues to say experience with alcohol is the one thing all AA members have in common. It is misleading to hint or to give the impression that AA solves other problems or knows what to do about drug addiction. Now, if that is read at the beginning of every single AA meeting, then those people that are coming back day after day, they're going to hear that and it's going to sink in, and they're not going to feel like it's a personal thing. It's a principle. It's in the script. You can have a really strong script. You got to have either a really strong chairperson who can shut that stuff down appropriately, or a really strong script, or both, but you know, one or the other, because if you don't have either, you got a mess and your meeting's just going to be a lot of share time from a lot of people without sober time.